Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to the Beth We Radio Hour, an hour dedicated to helping you find connection so you can live your best life.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Beth Walsh Erickson. I'm in the studio today with my pal, Lee Kimball. How are you doing today, Lee?
You know me, Beth, a thrill a minute.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We have another guest with us today because we want to talk about something that's a little bit heavy and something that's on the hearts and minds of many people. And yet, it's something that isn't talked about a lot. You know, here at Beth, we try to help people connect, communicate, and thrive. That's our goal, is to try to help people find their way in the world so that they can have happy, successful, and whole lives. And one of the biggest things in current history, in modern times, that's kind of breaking that up is addiction. Let's face it, you know somebody who has a problem either with alcohol or drugs. It used to be, when I was a kid, I remember when my father got cancer. It was like nobody would say the word because nobody had really heard of it. It was like something that, you know, people whispered about, like, oh, this is cancer, you know. And now you can't meet a person who hasn't met somebody, loved somebody, known somebody that has had to deal with some sort of cancer.
And it's kind of the same thing, Beth, because in both situations, it's not that it wasn't there. It just, the awareness was not there.
Right. And now, another way that it's the same, Lee, that I want to bring up is I know that addiction is a disease. It's not a moral choice. A lot of people think it's a moral choice, that people are just bad people or just out there just ruining their lives. Why don't they just quit? I remember the whole Just Say No campaign. I kind of laughed at that, you know, when I started dealing with people that have addiction issues, because I realized that when she said just say no to drugs, if you say that to an addict, that's like saying just buy a house to a homeless person.
Or a depressed person, you know, just cheer up.
Yeah. If they had the means or the way they could do it, they would. So we have a guest in our studio today. I invited Ashley. Ashley, welcome.
Hi, good morning.
It's good to have you here on the radio with us, because what we're finding is that addiction destroys families as well as individuals. You know, it really does affect the family members. If somebody you love has a problem with addiction, whether it's drinking or using drugs, it can be anything. It can be overeating. It can be sex. It can be gambling. These addictions, these things that people do when they can't seem to shake, they cannot seem to stop, or they'll stop for a while, they'll start again, they'll stop for a while, they'll start again. They are really hurting a lot of our families. So we decided it was time to invite a family member of someone. Yeah. and have Ashley come in and talk to us a little bit about what's going on. You know, living with an addict is exhausting work, and it's heartbreaking. It's hard to watch because you love the person, and especially if you're not an addict. You're looking at them like, why can't she or he just stop? And you don't understand because you don't have it. You don't have that, the skewed thinking, which is one of the things that people recognize in addiction. It's a way of thinking that is just skewed. It's like a obsessive thought, where the thought of the drink or the drug keeps coming back into the mind, even when it shouldn't be.
And so often what it will do is it'll just bring out just such a deep desire and frustration of wanting to be able to help, wanting to be able to fix it, but having no comprehension of what you're up against.
Well, you know, living with an addict is, like I said, heartbreaking and exhausting. And family members get torn. Like, how am I supposed to help? Mm-hmm. And sometimes family members don't get torn. They get put into a position where they have to make a snap decision, and it can change a life. And that is your story, isn't it, Ashley?
It is.
Could you tell us, would you be comfortable telling us a little brief synopsis of what happened?
When I was 27, my niece became pregnant. She was 18. Mm-hmm. She had a beautiful daughter, and she just couldn't control her addiction. So about 2 years later, DCF became involved.
And what is DCF?
Department for Children and Families.
Okay. And that's like a governmental agency that oversees, because, you know, a lot of people listening don't really know what that is. Yeah, DCF is like, it's like the police to make sure families are doing okay.
Right.
Well, other parts of the country, they call it Child Protection Services.
Yes. Right. Okay. So DCF got involved.
They became involved, and it was to put the child in a family member's home or foster care. We chose.
So that was the choice, family member's care or foster care.
Right.
That's a hard decision.
And it was, because I was already obsessed with this little girl. I mean, she was beautiful. She was my niece. My great niece.
Yeah.
And smart, funny. And this is it too.
And you're only 27 years old.
At the time.
So, because you have one of those families, one of those modern families
yes.
where there's a wide age range in between siblings.
My sister is 15 years older, and I was the surprise.
Yeah.
So it was kind of who's able to. And at the time, my mom wasn't feeling that well. So her health was kind of declining, and my sister couldn't adopt at the time or foster, and it came to me. And it was, I was 27. I was single, free. I had no bills. Surprise.
Now
I have
bills. You're a worker. I know you. I've seen you work.
Yes.
And you're a worker. You tend to work. You're a two-job worker. You have a good work ethic.
Yes.
So you were working, and you were raised, creating your own life.
And, right. And okay. I had just been dating my fiance for 2 months. And I kind of told him, hey, if you want to continue dating me, this is what's going to happen. We're going to be a ready-made family. And that's what happened. It was kind of overnight. I cleaned up my act, cleaned up my house, figured out a room, everything. And she came to live with us.
And your fiance hung in?
He hung in. He's still there.
This is going to be a tough show for me to get through without crying.
That's a lot. So that's how it starts. And now, before we go on with your story, mm-hmm. I just want to kind of get people acclimated that what we're talking about, this is happening around the country, around the world, but especially in developed countries. It's where drugs and alcohol have taken a different... a higher effect
mm-hmm.
on they're affecting society in a new way, and the reality is we have the baby boomers having kids, so it's the kids of the baby boomers, and it's an interesting thing to see how the drugs and alcohol are affecting this next generation as well as the baby boomer generation. Don't mm-hmm. let me make you think that they're off the hook, because they're definitely in there.
Now, you had mentioned that we all know somebody that has been affected by, but I mean, I think we all know somebody also that is raising somebody that has been subject to this, be it a grandparent, be it a sibling, be it, as with our friend Ashley, an aunt.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, many people hope it's for a time. It's going to be for a short time. Is that what you thought, Ashley?
Honestly, at first, I thought... and I honestly was ready to adopt at that time. I made the decision if that was going to happen, that was what was going to happen. And Kelsey rehabilitated for about a year and a half. And I had already been raising Mila. And all of a sudden, she got him back. So for 2 weeks, I was a mess.
Because it went from you had your family now has changed again. And now you...
Now I'm single again. Not single, but now I'm not a mom.
Yeah.
So it was weird.
Yeah.
And always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah. Can she have her back? Can she not have her back? And so
she take care of her?
Right. And we found out within 2 weeks she came back to live with me. So she wasn't taking care of her.
Because the addiction came back.
Right.
It came back. Well, and I'm going to just kind of address this from the people, the addict's frame of mind. And I'm just for those of you that are struggling to say, how could she finally got her daughter back. How could she drink or drug or whatever her choice was then? And the reality is sometimes new stresses can be positive and negative. Stress isn't always a bad thing. We think of the word stress as something that's bad, but I'll tell you what, if you walk into a room and 30 people yell surprise and it's for you, your heart rate changes. Your body reacts to it, and your blood is pumping, and you're having a different reaction. For many, your emotional reaction to that is oh my gosh, this is for me, and it should be a good emotion. We all think of that as that's so sweet that they did that wonderful party for her, but the reality is for an addict, it's too much. It's overwhelming, and all they can think of is numb this, numb this, numb this. And their disease will start to talk to them again. It's a tough thing, but that's the reality. So we look at this, and you got Myla back.
Mm-hmm.
She was with her mom for two weeks. That's sad. You had her for a year and a half while the mother got clean and sober, mm-hmm. so to speak, or tried to get clean and sober. She finally got to a point where they would award her daughter again.
Mm-hmm.
But within 2 weeks, she was using again.
Yes.
And how old was Myla at this point?
She was about 3 and a half, going on 4.
Okay. And just for you, is your niece a drug addict or an alcoholic?
Drugs.
Drugs.
Yes.
What kind of drugs?
Opiates. Pretty much anything she can find.
The opiate, what's happening in our country right now with these opiates is pretty intense. And it's changing the lives of many people. And the reality of an opiate drug is if you need them, they're really important. I've seen people, even at the end of their lives, they need those drugs. I recently had a friend pass who was at the VNA hospice house, and they were giving her drugs to make her more comfortable. And she was, you know, she was out of it a little bit here and there, but she needed that to not feel the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for someone else that's using it...
emotional pain.
Yeah, well, it's hard because they get used to being that feeling of numbness, and people can become addicted that wouldn't normally be addicted because these opiates are so strong now. This Oxycontin, for example, I don't know a lot of people. They say by the fourth time you use it, you're usually addicted.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want to take away the experience of many that, you know, because it is the opiates, but it can be the amphetamines, it can be the crack, it can be the alcohol. Where people, it will override instincts. It will override the mother instinct, the parent instinct. It just becomes, it gets fed first.
Well, it's funny. I was at Publix the other day with a friend, and we were waiting to pick up a prescription for their parent. And somebody came to buy some cold medicine, and they had to ask the pharmacist, and it was just like Claritin and... You know, they were regular names, like things that used to just be on the shelves. And I said to my friend, I said, why are those behind the pharmacy?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, I guess because something in them is used to make
methamphetamine.
Methamphetamine, mm-hmm. crystal meth.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to have an ID to buy. I had no idea. I was just like, wow, I'm so out of the loop sometimes. We're going to take a short little break, but we're talking today about the lives and the loves of people. People that know addicts and alcoholics, and they're living in the fallout of their addiction. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Beth Walsh Erickson in the studio with my partner in crime, Lee Kimball, and we have a guest today, Ashley. And we're talking today about living and loving addicts and what that means and what that can mean to lives. Ashley's been telling us her story. Now, at this point, you were a 27-year-old woman, and you started an instant family. You got the daughter of your niece, who was a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
After having her for a year and a half, you had to give her back.
Yeah.
And that lasted for only 2 weeks before your niece tested positive, I would guess, for her drug of choice. So the DCF, which is what did you call it, Lee?
In many other parts of the country, it's called CPS, Child Protective Services.
Okay, so the DCF is in Florida, the Department of Children and Families. They keep the families protected. They took the child away and gave her back to you, Ashley. And what happened from there?
From there, we had a wonderful caseworker. We also had a guardian ad litem that comes in, and they help you kind of prepare your house because I had no idea how to raise a child. I hadn't had the 9 months to prepare, and even if I had, I don't know if I would have known at the time.
Right.
And we had a guardian ad litem, Patsy Moynihan. I just want to say is amazing.
She is an amazing woman.
She really is. She's
a local Vero Beach people. For those of you listening in another part of the country, she's a wonderful woman in our little area, and you have those same people where you live. Yeah, good
but
for
the
you.
The people that participate in that, you know, a shout out to them in general because it's really...
It's hard work because you have to see some hard things, but you also bring in some joy and some constancy and consistency into the lives of children.
And it's about the children.
Yeah, it is about the children. So go ahead.
And I mean, she was there once a week, every week, and just giving, you know, tidbits or this is what you can do to help help the homework time or help this. And I needed that because I wasn't, you know. And she was amazing. And then we went through the whole adoption process. And that in itself, again, lasted about another year. You had to have, had to make sure that I had enough income, had enough everything. You know, but did I have enough rooms in my house? Was there enough restrooms in the house? It was everything. And once it got approved, we went in front of Judge Morgan, and he declared me a mom. And it was one of the scariest days of my life. It was amazing, but at the same time, it was really sad because he was telling my niece that she was an unfit parent. And I love her. I, you know, she is my niece. She's battling addiction, but I wouldn't change what I did, but it was a lot at the time.
Oh, that is a lot. That's a lot of emotional, the joy of it and the sadness of it all wrapped up into one. We get it. We're with you.
Yeah.
So from there, what's happened?
Oh, wow. What hasn't happened? It's holidays are a mess. Thanksgiving, I usually do a big Thanksgiving. And this year, I just couldn't deal with the drama because my dad and mom are they're very forgiving people and very unconditional love. And so I was inviting my niece every Thanksgiving, and it was just a mess. It was every Thanksgiving was so much drama that I think maybe one person ate a plate of food and the rest just went to waste because everybody went home and didn't want to be around it and didn't want to see it. And so this year I just did a very small one. It was just my immediate family and my dad. And I feel less stressed. It was no drama, no, you know. And I hate that, though, because at the same time, she's texting me and she's all alone on Thanksgiving.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of times one of the side effects of addiction is a propensity to make it all about them.
Right. That's definitely the case.
Well, and that's something that I want to mention. You know, when you're dealing with an addict, it's tough. And I'm just going to throw out some ideas of things you can do. If you're listening to this radio broadcast and you maybe you're not raising their children, maybe you're not, but you're dealing with loving somebody who comes in your house and steals from you. I mean, somebody you love, but they come in your house and steal from you. Or you have to suddenly change the locks on your door and it's because of somebody you love. These are realities for people. Maybe not for you listening, but maybe for your next door neighbor or the person right down the street or the woman you work next to at work every day, because this is the reality of what's going on. So it's important that you educate yourself on what is addiction and what is recovery. You know, we're not judging these people or accusing them. It's nothing like that. It's a difficult time for you and also for them, but it's important that you know what's real.
And also that you know what is within your power and what is not within your power.
Right. You know, you have to understand that your life will change just because you love them. Your life will change. Like I just said something about changing locks or Ashley just mentioned not having someone at Thanksgiving dinner. That's a big change and a difficult change. But sometimes the things we remove so that we are not hurt, you know, we take care of ourselves so that we're not hurt. We don't have them in our homes because they steal from us. If we meet them, we meet them at a coffee shop, or we meet them at a breakfast place and we try to buy them food and have a nice breakfast with them or something like that.
Or as in this case, they steal our peace of mind.
Right. But I mean, if you're going to meet with someone like that, maybe have it at an off home location so that it is safe for you as well as for them. But the reality is, the addict needs to hit what is called a bottom. And that's kind of a euphemism for the place where they say, enough is enough. How many addicts hit that bottom? I'm really sorry to tell you that not very many. Many will use to death. You know, the result of strong addiction is death. It's of course, it could be jail, and it could be hospitalization for both like a mental hospitalization or an institution of sorts, but for many it's death. And that's hard. This is somebody you love and you're saying, I am powerless over making this better.
Or you're not, or you're saying, I have to do something to stop this.
And that's what you have to come to meet with other people then that understand it. You know, there's a lot of places. Maybe we can put these on our website. I'll try to put them on there later today. Al-Anon for family members of alcoholics. Nar-Anon for family members of addicts. Gam-Anon for family members of gamblers. There's CODA for people that are codependent. There's adult children of alcoholics, if your parents are the ones that you're dealing with. There's different ways for you to reach out and find help. And all of these have websites, you know, al-anon.org or adultchildren.org. This is a place where you can go online and just kind of read and say, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one dealing with it. As a matter of fact, there's a ton of people dealing with it. And they have the three C's of dealing with an addict. You know, you didn't cause the addiction. You can't control the addiction. And you can't cure the addiction. You must come to understand that at some point if you're going to get along with loving this person. Because what will happen otherwise is you will wear yourself out. And you won't be able to change it. You can put them through how many treatment programs? How many people have gone broke putting their kids through treatment programs that just never seem to work?
And what they're doing, Beth, and it's to me, it's synonymous with enabling. You buy your own short-term peace of mind at their long-term expense.
Right.
You know.
And what is enabling, Lee? You mentioned enabling.
Enabling is where, you know, like I said before, I love somebody so much that I'm willing to do anything to try and help them or fix it. And anything may be paying their rent, anything may be bailing them out of jail, giving them a place to stay, you know, inviting them back after they've made themselves uninvitable, you know, just not being willing to accept my powerlessness.
Right. I recently, it was a day that was a birthday of a good friend of mine, one of my best friends in my life. And we went our separate ways early on because she got involved with drugs. And for many years, I tried to help her. I would show up at her little apartment. She had lost her house, her children, her husband, her front teeth, her ability to work. She had her hair was like brittle and like, oh, it was horrible. She
was
a beautiful woman.
That wasn't enough.
She was a beautiful woman. And she kept going. She lost her kidney function. And so she had to do dialysis regularly. And I remember I would bring food. She would eat eggs sometimes, eggs and toast and stuff. And I would bring her food. Every time I went to the grocery store, I'd drop some by. And my child was small at the time. I brought the food into her little house, and my daughter came walking up after, and I was like, oh my gosh. And as I'm walking in, she's hitting a pipe. She's smoking crack cocaine. And I'm thinking, you know, if the police came right now, I could lose my child trying to give this woman food. This is what we're dealing with, people. This is addiction. It is not a pretty thing. That friend passed recently, a few years back, and you know, it's a hard thing to watch somebody pass, but that is what happens sometimes. Sometimes they don't get well. We're talking about some hard things today, and it is tough. We're talking about loving someone who can't stop using drugs or alcohol or gambling, sex, other people, whatever it is they're doing, and we're talking that they're ruining other lives. Addiction is something that they're not the only ones who suffer from the pain of the disease. We're going to take a break. We're going to hear the news. We're going to come back with our 5 on 5, and then we'll get back to this topic. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned.